Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Gran Turismo, Golda, Ahsoka, Vacation Friends 2, and Pee-wee's Big Holiday. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Mavka, the Forest Song. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And even though I'm going to be pulling away from Twitter, mainly because Elon Musk is insane and pulling out the blocking feature and taking away TweetDeck, you can still find me there occasionally at Kevin Carr, but also on Blue Sky at Kevin Carr and Mastodon at Kevin Carr if you decide to hit me up on either of those two places.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's talk about the box office. Last week, Blue Beetle actually won the box office, knocked Barbie off her throne. They got $25 million for Blue Beetle, which was not very good, by the way. It's about half of what The Flash got. Now, I don't necessarily ding Blue Beetle for that because The Flash had way more name stars and name super characters. A lot of people had no idea who Blue Beetle is. If you can't open a movie at $100 million with Flash and Batman and all the other stars that are in it, well, Flash was a problem. But Blue Beetle won for $25 million. Barbie dropped only less than 40% to $21 million. So they just barely got beaten. And then Strays collapsed with $8.3 million, which is not very good at all. Once again, we're seeing the same thing that happened last summer, where there's one or two big hits and then everything else peters out from there. And honestly, with Gran Turismo being the big movie this weekend, I would not be surprised if Barbie ended up making more and winning the weekend. Because if it drops only 40%, I guarantee you Blue Beetle's going to drop more. And in fact, this weekend, they're doing the $5 tickets through National Cinema Day. I think like Regal and AMC are all honoring those. So we'll see how the box office responds, but who knows? Now, the next piece of news I want to talk about is the strike, or the strikes, because the WGA got a counterproposal by the AMPTP, which is the Association of Motion Picture and Television Producers. Here's the thing that most people are ignoring in this story. That counterproposal came over 100 days after the strike started. It shows that they were just ignoring the writers. But they were just hoping that they would break in that first 100 days, and they didn't. And then SAG went on strike, and they're like, oh, crap. So they came up with a counterproposal, and it addresses stuff like some of the big issues that they have, like compensation and residuals and size of writing room and guaranteed employment, and in particular AI. But the WGA came out and were like, that's not enough. You didn't do enough in this counter proposal, and it took you over 100 days to get it to us. And then apparently the AMPTP this past Monday, they brought in like a bunch of executives, like Iger from Disney and Sarandos from Netflix and Zaslav from Warner Brothers Discovery. And they invited the WGA people to talk to them. And WGA has characterized this as like a lecture where the executives were like, come on, people, we need to make a deal. We've given you a counteroffer. But I don't think it shows very much good faith on actually wanting to make a deal if you wait 100 freaking days to do a counteroffer. That's dumb. And as a result, because that was not resolved, now they're still talking, sure, but this is going to go on forever. And later this week, we got the announcement that Dune, one of the Warner Brothers Discovery's big tentpole releases, is getting moved out of its 2023 release dates. It's now going to be released in March. It was coming out in November. And to me, you know what that says? That means the Marvels is going to be pushed. The Marvels, they need Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson. They definitely need those two people out there promoting this movie, and they're not going to get it if there's a strike going on. So I think we just saw the very first major domino fall in the fall slash winter slash award season. Now, I think the industry is hoping that they're going to push the Oscars, But holy cats, man, if they're taking out one of the giant tent poles, the rest are going to follow. And what that shows is that Warner Brothers has no faith that this thing's going to be resolved in a timely manner. Because Warner Brothers was one of those people at that meeting. So this is going to go on for a long time. We are in for the record books when it comes to the length of this strike. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is coming to Netflix. Actually, both of these are Netflix films. The first one is Reptile, and it drops on October 5th.
Is there anyone you can think of who might have done this?
A few nights ago, this guy showed up at my house, acting strange.
Strange in what way? Who do we like from this?
I'll go with the boyfriend.
I got the friend.
I'll take the weirdo.
I'm going with the ex-husband.
Am I a suspect?
Everyone is a suspect.
Tell me what's going on.
This looks like a somewhat off-center police procedural. It's about, looks like a murder. I don't know anything about the behind the scenes of this, but it's got a pretty good cast. It's got people like Benicio del Toro and Justin Timberlake. Alicia Silverstone shows up now. I mean, she's like in her 40s now, which makes me feel as old as dirt. But I'm curious to see it because I do like a good, solid police procedural in this kind of thing. And like something like Prisoners, although I didn't think Prisoners was that great. I loved Sicario, but I wasn't a huge fan of Prisoners. And there was that one with Denzel Washington and Jared Leto a couple years ago. That one was kind of weak. But maybe Reptile will be pretty good. So I'm looking forward to that. The next one I want to talk about is Rebel Moon, which is coming to December, at least the first part of it, on December 22nd.
What do you think they want?
Everything.
I found her. Scargiver.
I am a child of war. I was taught that love is weakness.
There is a difference between justice and revenge.
There is a price to pay for your defiance.
This is Zack Snyder's latest project. And I know Zack Snyder's got a lot of his broheads out there who like his stuff and will always adore Zack Snyder. And here's the thing. I blow hot and cold with Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder, to me, he's like, I'm going to compare him to people like Christopher Nolan, where his strongest works, I think, were his earlier ones before he developed the style that just defined him into something that I don't particularly like. Like I said, Christopher Nolan, the stuff he makes now is just all a very Nolan movie. And I don't think they're very good or well-written. And I know a lot of people disagree with me. But Zack Snyder, I feel the same way. I loved his version of Dawn of the Dead. And I also really liked Watchmen. But once he started doing the DC superhero movies after Watchmen, you know, Man of Steel, and then the Batman versus Superman I enjoyed, because a darker, grittier Batman movie works, not a Superman movie. And then Justice League was kind of a mess. And that's not really his fault, because of his family drama that was going on. But Rebel Moon, I don't know, this is certainly him wanting to do Star Wars. The problem is I've heard a lot of people make the Star Wars connection, obviously, because it looks like in the trailer, it looks like this guy's flinging around lightsabers. There's not a whole lot of creativity there. You know, it's sort of like how Seth MacFarlane did The Orville, which is essentially him doing a Star Trek show, but just avoiding certain things that call it Star Trek. But Rebel Moon looks, I feel more of a John Carter of Mars feel to this movie. And I like John Carter of Mars, but this one just, it looks like overly stylized Zack Snyder again. I'm so tired of sci-fi movies about a bunch of dirty, smelly, unwashed people with bad hair living in dirt, fighting for that dirt. And I know there's a certain reality to that, but that's one of the things I like about Star Wars. Star Wars has some scope to it. This doesn't, at least this trailer didn't look like it had a ton of scope, but we'll see. We'll see what happens in December when it comes out. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Ahsoka and Golda. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews. Let's kick things off with Ahsoka. This is the latest Star Wars series. It's on Disney Plus. This Star Wars live-action series follows Anakin Skywalker's old Padawan, Ahsoka Tano, as she searches for a missing ally.
It's been a while. Things have changed. I started hearing whispers about Thrawn's return as heir to the Empire. We have to prepare for the worst.
First of all, and I've said this before, but look, if I could go back in time and let 10-year-old Kevin Carr know, I'd be able to watch on TV at my house with a screen the size of my wall, not just the Star Wars movies and that they made six more, and but they'd be like an ongoing TV series that periodically showed up every couple months. There's a new series and a new season of something, whether it's Mandalorian or Obi-Wan Kenobi, Book of Boba Fett, Andor, even though I wasn't a huge fan of Andor. But, you know, I mean, and now we've got Ahsoka. I would have lost my mind. I mean, this is like a dream come true. I mean, little geeky sci-fi nerd Kevin Carr, when he was in the 80s, if you would have just given me a subscription to Disney Plus and Paramount Plus, I could watch all the Star Wars and Star Trek stuff and I would just lose my mind and I'd never leave the house. I would have never gotten married. I would have never started on the radio. But this one is based on the character that comes from originally the Clone Wars, Anakin's Padawan in the animated series that was, I think it started originally on Cartoon Network and eventually moved to Disney when Disney bought Lucasfilm. And there's a whole fan base devoted to the Clone Wars. I never got into the Clone Wars. The first season or two I thought was kind of dull, and I never like stuck through it. But then they did the series Rebels, and they got some of the characters from Rebels also tied into this. And she showed up in The Mandalorian, played by Rosario Dawson, and so they have her bringing the character to life in this series. And they brought some of the voice actors who played the character, like Clancy Brown is apparently, he played a voice actor in, I think, the Clone Wars. And Ray Stevenson, rest in peace, I think he was a character on the show, and they have him doing the live-action version of it. And I've always said that the Star Wars universe is big enough for there to be multiple movies and TV shows, multiple storylines and multiple eras, and also multiple types of movies and TV shows. Like when Andor came out, it's no surprise, I'm not a huge fan of Andor. I thought it was kind of boring and dull and slow-moving, and I didn't like the characters. There are a lot of problems with that. But I'm okay with it existing. What irritates me are the people who saw Andor and was like, I want everything to be like Andor. It's like, no, you can still have the stuff that's like everything else. You can have this kind of a show, but that doesn't mean you have to make every show like that. And I like there being a big enough universe that, or a galaxy, that you can play around with all these different characters. That this is a little bit more of a slow burn. It's kind of somewhere between The Mandalorian and Andor. It's also, look, you know, if you're one of those guys out there, if you're one of those bros who had a lot to say about the Barbie movie this summer, you're going to lose your incel minds over this because it's all women in the main roles. I'm okay with that. I'm on board. I don't care. I just want to see a good Star Wars show. And I think that that's what this is. But I will say this, as a lifelong Star Wars fan, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good start. It's a little bit slower than some of these other shows that they have. But it has the action, and it has the lightsabers, and it has the laser guns, but it also has a brewing story that's not resolving itself in the first episode or two, and that's good. So I think the first two episodes are out now. They're going to have one coming every week for the next month or two. But yeah, it's a slower burn than some Star Wars series, but this takes its time, but it has plenty to enjoy, especially if you're a fan of the Clone Wars or Rebels. I'm going to say Ahsoka rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Golda. Helen Mirren stars as Israeli leader Golda Meir during the tumultuous Yom Kippur War.
In my day, they stood for the Prime Minister.
Secretary Kissinger is on the line.
Remember that I am first an American, second I am Secretary of State, and third, I am a Jew.
You forget that in Israel we read from right to left.
The American people will pay a high price for supporting Israel.
If we have to, we will fight alone.
Our troops on the canal, they're surrounded.
You rescue these boys.
Might lead to catastrophe.
I was a baby at the time of this, so I didn't see this playing out in the news. And as a little kid, I might have heard it as I walked through the room or toddled through the room. Who knows? But what's interesting about it, the one thing that I thought was interesting is they're dealing, in the Yom Kippur War, they're dealing with Egypt. And Sadat, Anwar Sadat, was the leader of Egypt. And I remember when he got assassinated, I was in second or third grade, maybe, when he was assassinated. I remember when that happened. And I'm realizing, oh, that's a connection I can make. But I have no context to it because I don't know Arab-Israeli politics the way I think you need to understand this movie. I mean, it's dense and it's filled with the nuance of Arab-Israeli politics, especially Israeli politics. And it kind of just drops you in. So it's a little bit more of like a docudrama type show. And it shows Golda Meir as the person trying to be in charge, but at the same time win a war and at the same time protect her people. And it shows the good and the bad. It shows the victories and the catastrophes that happen throughout this. Now, Helen Mirren plays Golda Meir. And last week I talked about Bradley Cooper's fake nose to play Leonard Bernstein. And like I said, a good rule of thumb is if you're going to play a famously Jewish person, don't put a prosthetic nose on. It's going to be offensive and everyone's going to get upset about that. I don't care how much you think you do or don't look like them. So she does wear a prosthetic nose. So that's a problem here. And I know that there's certainly going to be some Jewish people who are going to be upset by that, as well they should. I mean, there was an attempt to completely eradicate their bloodlines from the world. So they're understandably sensitive about this sort of thing. And, you know, prosthetic noses are, it's the Jewish version of blackface. But once you get past that, I think Helen Mirren does a really good job. I mean, does that surprise anybody? She's a fantastic actor. She does a good job. She handles the weight of it, and she handles, adds enough humanity to the character, but she handles the slow and quiet contemplation. The biggest problem that I have is it is very hard to follow. You don't even have to know Arab-Israeli politics. You have to know Arab-Israeli politics as they were in the late 60s, early 70s. So it limits his audience greatly. But those who know it and are well-versed and live through it and understand it, they're going to like what I mean, unless fall on like the Palestinian side. Then they're probably not going to like a piece that makes Golda Meir look good. So it is going to be a politically charged piece. But it's a well-made movie. But I felt completely out of my depth when I was watching it. And that's not uncommon to see. There have been other movies like this that are about these very specific conflicts. But there was like this one series, and I talked about it a couple of years ago. It starred Sacha Baron Cohen as a Mossad agent who infiltrates Syria. And it was an interesting series, but the politics was beyond me because it was so nuanced. But they managed to make it more accessible. This one's not quite as accessible to somebody who's a little bit naive to what was going on back then. But still, you know, it's gritty and grounded. This shows the behind the scenes of wartime, but it can be difficult to follow without a working knowledge of the Arab-Israeli politics of the day. I'm going to have to say that Golda kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Gran Turismo and Vacation Friends 2. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Gran Turismo, based on a true story. Nissan sponsors a contest for the best Gran Turismo video game players to train as real-life race car drivers.
What is this?
It's a contest.
The best Gran Turismo players in the world get a chance to compete in professional racing.
Dude, this is real.
I'm sorry. You really think you're going to take a kid who plays video games in their bedroom, you're going to strap him to a 200-mile-an-hour rocket? It'll tear him to pieces.
The guys who race are elite athletes. But I won't stop now. Your kids are scrawny little gamer kids.
Well, that's why you come in.
I am not a gamer. I quit playing video games well, I mean, in the 80s. I mean, I was a Pac-Man guy and Donkey Kong and Tempest and Xevious and Defender to a lesser degree. Robotron, I was a big fan of Robotron. But once they went to consoles, my parents never bought me a console when I was a kid. And I knew people who had them, but, you know, I think when I was in college, I had a Nintendo, and I was good at that. I also looked Galaga. Galaga was another favorite game of mine. But I never got into the games, and now the games are so complex now with the controls. I mean, I remember the day where some games literally just had a joystick, but you go to some of these controllers on a game, and they got like 58 buttons on them. I was once playing something with my kids, and I said, I can't do this. There's too many buttons. It's an age thing. I'm sorry. So I don't know anything about video games, really. And I know nothing about Gran Turismo. I didn't even know it existed. As I understand, it's a simulator. It's what it's supposed to give a realistic experience of what it's like driving a race car. To the point that it mimics the feel of the ground and the feel of the wheel. And I mean, so... I can respect it as a massive piece of technology that was then marketed to a video game playing audience. So, yeah, but I'm completely unaware that it existed. And then they have the whole story's about this guy, this kid from the UK, who enters this contest and gets his chance to be a real race car driver. And I knew nothing about this. I'm completely ignorant of this. I'm not a sports guy anyways. But at least I have a working knowledge of football and baseball and basketball, but I don't know anything about car racing. If I were from North Carolina, I probably would be following NASCAR or whatever. But it bores me. I'm not a fan of race car driving. So this one is steeped in it. It's an underdog story, and it's a true underdog. I mean, it's right there in the title. It's called Gran Turismo, based on a true story, which usually mean it's bunk. But actually, from what I understand, from what I've read, it actually gets somewhat close to the actual story and events. It's a little bit of dramatic license taken, of course. And there's some good actors in it. I mean, well, Orlando Bloom plays the Nissan publicist or whatever, or marketing guy, and he's not that great. I've never been a huge fan of Orlando Bloom. David Harbour plays the guy who trains the players, and he's really good at it. He's kind of the heart and soul of it. The guy who plays the kid, I don't even know his name, but the guy who plays the kid who's sort of like the main character of the story, he's just kind of boring. I just don't think he's a... I mean, I just don't find him all that compelling. But, I mean, it's a beautiful looking film. For films nowadays that are shot like you're looking through a dirty fish tank, this one's not. It looks gorgeous. It's definitely worth seeing if you're a big racing fan. Go see it on the big screen. Go see it in IMAX. It looks really cool. It does. It does look cool. And it's slick as snot. I mean, it's like a new paint job on a car, and I get it. But it gets really into the minutiae of race car driving. And again, for those out there who don't know much about this, this is like European race car driving. You know, it's not NASCAR. So all you people out there clutching on to your Miller Lights and Budweisers, it's not that. So I don't know how well it's going to do in the States, because I don't see it as an American sports movie at all. And that makes it a very hard sell to a place where people want to watch NASCAR. And I mean, that's like making a soccer movie in America. They're very, very hard. Football movies, very easy to do. Not so much Gran Turismo racing. It's also way too long. And that's a problem with a lot of movies. And I get it. And yeah, it's not even the driving around the track. It's just, I'm just like, oh great. Another race. Oh boy, another race. And traditionally, racing movies don't do terribly well. And I mean, unless they have some sort of American element to it, they generally don't do well in America. That's why a movie like Rush didn't do super well. That was the one about... There's several driving movies that are very European-based, and it's not what a lot of Americans watch. So, I don't know. It's beautifully shot and with a decent underdog story, but the film often loses its nuance and minutiae in the sport. So I'm going to have to say Gran Turismo, based on a true story, kinda sucks.
It kinda sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Vacation Friends 2. Two couples who met on vacation take another one together, which includes a felon father-in-law and Caribbean drug dealers.
Look at us, all together again.
We just wanted to give you guys a real honeymoon.
What are they doing letting us in a place this nice?
How the hell did you get us in here?
You didn't tell them.
They're gonna be long gone by the time I get into my work thing.
You must be Mr. Parker. Apologies for the change in schedule. Mr. Young has invited you for drinks. All of you.
Guys, I need you to be really cool. Can you do that for me?
Look who you're talking to. When have we ever not been cool? Literally just released from St. Quentin.
When the first Vacation Friend came out a couple years ago, it was knee-deep in the pandemic. And I think they'd shot it, I think, before the pandemic started. But we were, like, knee-deep in lockdown. And it was a fun little movie. And I remember watching it at home saying this is a great way to sort of just get out of how you felt put upon and stressed out during the pandemic and lockdown and the isolation. And it was just a fun, silly lark of a film. I think what made the first movie work were the characters. I'm a huge fan of John Cena. Again, not for wrestling. I'm not a sports fan. But I think the guy has some great acting chops. And I think he's funny as all get out. And Lil Rel's in there too. And I like Lil Rel. And it gives him a chance to kind of have his own spotlight. Every time I see him in a movie, you know, something like, I think it was Get Out he was in. And he was also showed up in like Space Jam. But he's always like a secondary character. And this gave him a chance to kind of shine. And the first Vacation Friends is essentially, it's a big screwball comedy, and it's raunchy, and it's R-rated. And I know it just got raked over the critical coals, but I'm like, I thought it was funny. Because it was a mindless piece of entertainment you could watch on a Saturday night. So that was kind of nice. So now they've kind of brought it back together. This is not as sprawling of a movie. The other movie did spread it around a bit. It was written by more people. This one's just written by the director who did the first one as well. So it's a little more self-contained, but it still plays with the same things. And when it comes to a movie like this, a screwball type movie, it's very hard to recreate a similar situation of insanity without fumbling the ball, which has been done in multiple sequels, or just like being reductive and redoing the whole movie, like something like Hangover 2. But I thought they did a good job on this one because the characters have moved on to do different things and have developed a bit, and there's backstory to them or mid-story between the first film and this one. And it's not anything great, right? I mean, it's not Shakespearean tragedy and nuance to the characters. I mean, they're just silly. Like John Cena and his wife, they have a kid. And they're terrible parents, but you know, the whole point is that they're just so good-hearted people that things go well for them. But it's an absurd, silly comedy, and it completely hinges on the fact that I like the people involved. I like the actors. I think they're funny. And yes, is it stupid? Absolutely. Is it ridiculous? Yes. Does it make no sense at times? No sense at all in a lot of these things. You can outthink this movie after 17 beers and spinning around on the tilt-a-whirl. It's not hard to do. It's a basic screwball comedy, but I thought it was funny because the people involved, that's where the actors are so important. No matter how much good writing you have, you got to have people likable on screen, and I like them in this movie. So, you know, it's not as fresh as the first film, but the chemistry of the stars make this silly screwball comedy work. I'm going to say Vacation Friends 2 kind of rocks. And you can find it on Hulu.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Pee-wee's Big Holiday and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Mavka, the Forest Song.
Shake that.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the reviews with somewhat of a vintage one. Pee-wee's Big Holiday. Pee-wee Herman leaves his quaint town for the first time in his life to attend Joe Manganiello's birthday party.
Haven't you ever wonder what life is like outside Fairville?
Nope.
You know I don't want to go anywhere or try anything new.
Bye.
You ever been in a fight?
No.
Broken a rule?
No.
You ever had two women fight over you?
Have I? No.
I think I know why you and I met. You're gonna leave Fairville. And you're gonna take a holiday. You got a choice to make. Stick around here,
I live and let on.
If you recall, a couple weeks ago, tragically, Pee-wee Herman passed away from cancer, or Paul Reubens, who played Pee-wee Herman. Pee-wee Herman didn't pass away, Paul Reubens passed away. And that gave me a chance to go back and watch some of the Pee-wee stuff. And I mean, I've seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure multiple times. I love that movie. I think it's brilliant. It's fresh. It's got a electricity to it that Paul Reubens brought along with Tim Burton. There's a uniqueness to it, a brilliance and cleanness to that movie. I mean, I'm talking a clean being just crisp feel to it. So a week or two ago, I because of that, I revisited Big Top Pee-wee, which is his sequel. Didn't do as well, and if you recall my review of it, there's a reason why. I think it wasn't well written. It weirdly grounded things more than it needed to. There needs to be an absurdity, over the top nature through everything to make Pee-wee Herman work. And I didn't even realize that there was another Pee-wee Herman film out there. I mean, I knew he did this TV shows. He did like Pee-wee's Playhouse, and he did another one. People talk about cancel culture. He was canceled. And I mean, it was for good reasons. He was canceled for doing something, let's just say, obscene and in a very reasonably obscene place. But he did something obscene and he was doing a kid show at the time. So yeah, that was going to kill your career for a while. But he eventually came back and I think he did another Pee-wee show. But I'd never seen this. And it was done by Netflix a couple of years ago, I think like 2016 or something like that. And I was like, oh, I'm going to watch this. So I checked it out. And this is a lot closer to the Pee-wee Herman character and situations you had in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Because Pee-wee's Big Adventure, you had this character of Pee-wee Herman interacting with normal people, but everybody in the Pee-wee Herman world was also a little bit strange. And they kind of do this with this, where he goes, again, very much like the first film, Big Adventure, he goes on essentially a road trip. Because he's lived in this town all his life. He works at a diner. Joe Manganiello comes in, orders a milkshake. They become suddenly instant friends, and they have this weird little asexual bromance, basically, where they're going around and enjoying themselves, and Joe invites him to his birthday party and says, you got to leave town. Come over. Don't fly. Get on the road and take a road trip. And that's the other thing. I love road trips. I take road trips many times. I took a big, huge road trip this summer. I drove all the way to Seattle with my wife. And then visited family and friends and came back home. And yeah, there's a lot of boredom and a lot of mundanity in a road trip, but it's also very exciting and fun. And I've been to some weird places throughout the years. And I love the idea of taking that road trip. And you know, it's Pee-wee Herman's reaction to some of the strange people in strange situations that he runs into. Everything from the proverbial farmer's daughter that comes from all the different jokes that get told in bars, to there's like weird roadside attractions where they have like rattlesnakes or whatever. I mean, there's this one in Southern California called The Thing, and it's this weird little oddity museum with a mummy at the end of it. I mean, it's I've gone to these things. I've been to houses made of dinosaur bones. So that's kind of what this movie's about. But it also has this hilarious, over-the-top, hyper-real, silly version of Joe Manganiello in it. And he almost, I mean, there's, it's and it's funny as I was reading about this movie, people have sort of put this adjacent to queer cinema, you know, LGBT plus cinema, where they have this relationship that goes beyond just friends. And I don't know if it's trying to say anything subversive about it. It's just an interesting look at two people that just find a connection. It doesn't matter that they're two dudes. And so there's like this whole section of film criticism that has sort of latched onto that. And I think that's kind of adorable, you know, and the movie still works. So, yeah, this is a neat little film. I enjoyed the heck out of it. I wish Pee-wee Herman had done more films. I've not watched the Pee-wee's Playhouse stuff. But no, I mean, this is certainly a lot better than Big Top. You know, it's a better Pee-wee sequel than Big Top. But this film taps into the absurdity and childlike charm from Big Adventure. It's a welcome return to what kind of brought Pee-wee Herman on the map. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on a DVD. I missed this a couple weeks ago. It kind of fell off my radar. It came across my desk, and it's a DVD from Shout Factory. It's called Mavka, the Forest Song. It's actually based on a Ukrainian folktale in which a girl becomes a guardian of the forest, but she faces a crisis when she meets a charming musician who needs resources from a giving tree.
My name's Lucas. It says you'll pay well.
You can't waste your money on me. I'm old and...
So what do I have to do?
Find me the tree with this leaf. I am not a demon. I am Mavka, the soul of the forest.
I'm not so sure he came back from the forest empty-handed.
But they also gave me something I've never felt before.
I think it's neat when you take a tale or a legend or a folk tale or something like that from another country, because a lot of people don't realize how isolated we really are as Americans. You know, unless you have a familial connection to whatever your old country is. I mean, like, my family's from Hungary and Ireland. So I've got these little connections to Hungarian and Irish culture, but I mean, not even close to doing a deep dive into either one of them. But I know a little bit more about Hungary and Ireland than just your average person. But especially when you get to people that are second, third, fourth generation Americans, they're very removed from their country. And our country is so big that you can exist within our country and never leave it. And unless you live on a border, and even then you're just talking about like Mexico and Canada, unless you live near a border, it's not easy to get to another country. It's certainly not easy to get to Europe or Asia. They haven't built those bridges yet. This is a Ukrainian folktale, and so I think that's neat that they've got this from a Ukrainian point of view, and it has a Ukrainian company that's involved in it. And it tells the story of this guardian of the forest, and it's a very Disney princess type of setup, where this girl is, she's like a forest nymph, and she's being promoted to be the guardian of the forest, because the old guardian is, it's the end of his time, and he's tired, he's ready to move on. In taking the job, she runs into this kid who, he's not trying to exploit the forest. He's working for basically a company that's a logging company or whatever they're going to do. And they want to cut down the trees and use them as resources. And they can't get to the forest because the humans have been banished. They're not allowed through the dark portion of it because it's guarded. And so he's trying to lead them there and to get to this tree that they want to use as a resource because it's like a healing tree. And so it has these mystical elements to it, but it also has a very strong environmental theme. Now, if you're triggered by that, if you're bothered by somebody saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't cut down all the forests, you may not want to see this one. Does it have an agenda? Everything that has some form of environmental message is going to have an agenda. And look, I mean, I think that there are times where you can take environmental stuff and go a little bit too far. You know, the group of people who don't want to flush toilets. I'm going to keep my toilets and air conditioners. Thank you very much. But I mean, there's a certain logic and common sense to taking care of your environment. So yeah, that definitely has that message in there. And that comes from the history in the Ukraine and what things were like hundreds of years ago. It runs a bit long and it takes a long time. It probably should have been only about 70 minutes long, but it's about an hour and 40. And they have some characters where they have people do it. Like one guy does an Edwin voice for one of the characters in it. And it's a little annoying because it's clear he's just imitating Edwin. You know, if you don't know who that is, it was the Mad Hatter. He did a lot of things, but most recognized as the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland, the animated version. The hoo-hoo kind of guy. Oh, you know, that kind of a voice. That's the best Edwin impression I could do for you. So, I mean, it gets points for cultural expressions, though the environmental tale often falls into a bit of cliche. And it runs a little bit too long. So I'm going to have to say, unfortunately, it kind of sucks. But it's cute if you got, like, little kids and you're looking for something new.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Equalizer 3 and The Good Mother. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.